The Hard Shoulder on News Talk
with Nissan. Let's go the distance by keeping our distance. Nissan, innovation that excites.
It's a pleasure to welcome back Anne O'Connor, Chief Operating Officer of the HSE. Anne, I always find you candid, and I'll be candid. I find a sea change in the commentary, both from frontline people that I'm talking to on radio and television, and in terms of members of the public. Two big areas of criticism as opposed to questions. So with the testing, there are sort of three categories of people who are disgruntled. One, people who were discommoded by the change in the protocol. A lot of GPs had to face a lot of hassle. No, you're 40,000 on the list for a test. You're not getting a test because we're doing new priorities. Secondly, people who have since then qualified under that criteria, including healthcare workers, including GP, waiting 10 days to get a test. And then most complaints, people had a test and they're waiting up to 2 weeks to get the results. And they're just wondering. So what do you say to them?
Hi, Ivan. Good afternoon. Okay, so maybe just in terms of the testing, we've previously, I suppose, talked about the different pinch points around the testing pathway, if you like. We set out initially to address the challenge of being able to take tests and to do swabs. And in the space of 2 weeks, we set up what became 49 community testing sites, as well as the work that was being done in hospitals and the National Ambulance Service. So the ability to take tests scaled up. When we were up and running then, there was an issue with the supply of swab test kits. And I think it's important, again, just to reiterate that this is an unprecedented global challenge. So this is not just in Ireland. It is global, and we are in an international, very volatile market in relation to things like swab test kits, which we have now secured. So we secured a contract for those, and we have a supply chain for test kits. The next pinch point that is catching us now relates to the laboratory capacity, and in particular the supply of reagents that are used in the lab. And again, internationally and globally, this is a very significant issue. So laboratories are not able to source the reagents that they need to be able to process the tests. And that is our current pinch points. We have, however, now secured a contract to supply reagents, and those chemicals will be arriving on one of the Aer Lingus flights, bringing in the supply of PPE over the coming days. So we expect our capacity to improve again in the middle of next week. But what we're experiencing is no different, and in fact we have fared better. And maybe just to acknowledge the very, extensive and significant support that we've had from colleagues in the Chinese embassy in Ireland and their counterparts in China, who have been working with us and the IDA and others at a cross-government level to secure these supply chains at a time where many countries are struggling. So it is very difficult for people who believe that they need a test, or indeed those who've been referred for a test and they find that they are waiting these long periods. We are currently trying to address the delays in people getting their results. And you may have heard that we have sent some of these tests to China, or to Germany, to be able to get them processed so we can turn around the results for people who are waiting this week. But our priority is to be able to scale up our own laboratory capacity next week.
So if I applied for a test 10 days ago under your enhanced capacity for the swabbing, what would be a reasonable expectation that I might be called in the next few days, or what?
So what we've had to do with the swabbing, since you mentioned there that the criteria changed, and we are absolutely prioritising now two key groups, so healthcare workers and people who are in residential care settings. So, for example, nursing homes or other residential care settings where we may have to deal with outbreaks. Again, it's just important to reiterate that testing at an individual level doesn't really do much. So the rule set remains the same. If you believe you need a test or you've been referred for a test, you self-isolate at home for the 14 days. It doesn't change what happens to you. Really, testing is about the population view in terms of contact tracing and surveillance, so we can see how this infection is spreading nationally. And that's actually the most important part of testing. Not necessarily in terms of how we would treat any one individual who may be at home.
Okay, and my question was, if you applied for a test last Wednesday week, when might you expect to get it, if you're in the community?
If you're in the community, I mean, if you're in a priority
not
group...
Not a priority group.
Well, then you won't be prioritised, and it is unlikely that you will be called soon, given our lab capacity.
Would it not be more honest to say, and I'm trying to be... Because I totally agree with the prioritisation of health workers. I mean, you cannot have a situation that people are working in conditions and they don't know whether they're working side by side with someone or dealing with a patient who's positive. So I have no problem. If there's a limit, let's just call it. We can only do X amount a day. So really, would it not be better to say, as they've said in the UK, there is no community testing?
I think what we have done, so over the course of this week, we are only offering appointments. So there are people who have been held up waiting from last week in terms of just the length of time it has taken. We have, I suppose, we have issued a lot of appointments to people and have tested a lot of people. So we've tested over 45,000. The challenge is for those tests to be processed now, and people are waiting. But in terms of the actual waiting for a test, we are now only offering appointments in line with the available capacity. So as of this week, we have scaled back testing in the community. And maybe just in terms of the scale of the testing, Ivan, what was very interesting for us today, again, our colleagues in the Chinese embassy arranged for us to have a video conference with the team in Hubei province in China, who would be very highly regarded in terms of their approach to testing. And pro rata in terms of population, we're at a similar level in terms of how we have been testing. And in fact, up until this week, we would have been testing a higher number in terms of the percentage of the population. So our testing numbers have actually been very high. And certainly internationally, we're up in one of the highest countries around testing. So I think it doesn't take away from the personal distress for people who believe that they may have this infection and who are waiting for confirmation. But again, just to reiterate that the real value in testing is to know the numbers for surveillance and contact tracing.
Okay.
Not for the care.
What's the maximum then, someone who's awaiting, they've done their swab, what's the maximum with the German laboratory thing, with the ENFER coming on stream, with the reagents coming on stream, what's the longest someone will have to wait for a result? For a test?
When all of those factors have been addressed, so again, you know, the laboratory capacity is starting to increase next week, and it'll grow then over the weeks after that. But we are looking for a much faster turnaround. When we started the testing, we were saying that, you know, the lab results were coming within 2 and 3 days. And if we can get back to that, obviously, that would be ideal, or even a lot less. But I suppose it would be remiss of me to make any kind of promises based on what we're experiencing in terms of market supply and just how complicated this is in terms of securing supplies.
Okay.
Our goal is to increase capacity next week and to continue to grow that.
Okay, it is what it is. Now, PPE. Right, so when we spoke last week, you explained that stocks were running low, that you were moving certain stocks in parts of the country that did and didn't have them, and so on. We're talking about masks, goggles and gowns. So we were looking at the Chinese situation, and I was listening to Paul Reed's tweet. People are saying some of the gowns are not fit for purpose, and some of the masks are not of sufficient quality. What's your assessment of the material we've got? Because it does disturb people when they hear that there may be an alternative supplier being sought.
Yeah, so I think that the issue of PPE is one that is taking up, I suppose, a huge amount of everybody's time at the minute. And it's obviously, for good reason, of very, very significant concern. And we have many workers who are very concerned, and rightly so, when they're working in health services. For us, the supply chain that we initially secured, and again, we couldn't have done it without colleagues all around helping us with the Chinese market and people in China with the Chinese embassies. But for us, we secured that supply that started arriving last weekend. So there was well-publicised flights coming in from Aer Lingus that started last weekend. Again, just in terms of the position we're in, our normal due diligence processes that we would always try and go through just can't be applied in terms of the timeframes we're working to here and the complexity of getting stock in at that scale within such a short period. So stock started to arrive, and that has given rise to some issues. Now, most of the stock is actually fine. I think what is, you know, what is challenging people in our system, there are two things. One is the fear that it's not fit for purpose in terms of healthcare. However, all of the stock that is arriving that has been ordered through that supply chain is being assessed when it arrives. And some of it looks and feels different. It is suitable in terms of meeting standards, but it is not what we would have traditionally used in terms of the gowns in particular.
However, three-quarter length sleeves is what I'm hearing.
Yeah, that is not the stock that we've ordered. So the pictures of three-quarter length sleeves today, I think that's not what's come in the shipment that we've ordered that started arriving last weekend. So
that's other stock, yeah.
Well, I won't get into that. So I think there's lots of supply around, but it's not necessarily the stock that's come in from the supplier that we're using. And again, that supplier that we are using has been working very, very closely with us on a daily basis. And any issues that are arising are being addressed really quickly. So, for example, one issue that I'm aware of relates to the goggles. So they are suitable for use in healthcare environments, but the feedback is that the frame is just too rigid. So we've already been working with the provider, and the next lot of that to start arriving will be more pliable and will be what we are, what our staff want. The second line of supply that maybe you're referencing there is another very significant volume, again, through Chinese networks and from China. And that shipment, when it starts to arrive, which is from the 9th of April onwards, will have already addressed the challenges that we're picking up with the first batch. So we are constantly troubleshooting. Again, the pace and scale of this, you know, there are many things that are less than ideal, but I suppose we do have to remember that only a couple of weeks ago, our concern was that we wouldn't have PPE. Now we have it, and there are some difficulties with it. In the main, it's fine. We are distributing it, but we are troubleshooting the concerns that are arising.
Nursing homes, okay. A Dáil debate yesterday revealed one incredible case of four deceased and so many infected, so many staff stood down and so on. The deployment of volunteers and extra people, the 60,000 with Ireland's Call that were coming in, are they being deployed just to sort of public acute hospitals and to these new respiratory hubs, state run? Are you helping out the nursing homes who have acute staff shortage problems?
Absolutely. We're helping out. I mean, we'd be very concerned about nursing homes. And we're helping them out in a number of ways. So for us, obviously, the people in nursing homes would be a very highly vulnerable group. And to be fair, you know, some nursing homes are fine, but there are a number that are really struggling. And what we are doing about that is that where there is an outbreak, and that is the biggest concern for us, is where we have an outbreak in a residential setting where we have vulnerable people. Our public health teams are very involved in that. But critically, we also, in each of the areas now, will have a crisis response team, which would include senior clinical staff, so senior nursing, senior medical geriatrician staff to, I suppose, wrap around that nursing home and to help them to manage. So there are some things that are very, very important, like infection control procedures, and we are working closely with HICWA in relation to those nursing homes that are in trouble. We're supporting the nursing homes in terms of their approach to occupational health for their staff, in terms of how they can get their staff back to work as quickly as possible, and also critically working with agencies that would supply staff. So many nursing homes will use agency staff, so we are working with the agencies to ensure that staff are not deployed across different nursing homes, that if they are working on an agency basis, they work in one nursing home. So a lot of those measures are now kicking in, and we are doing everything we can to ensure that nursing homes can, I suppose, work their way through this and manage outbreaks. Because, you know, otherwise we will see people become very ill, and critically those people may end up in hospital, which obviously we don't want either. So we have got a team now in each area supporting nursing homes where they are experiencing outbreaks and where they can't manage. But again, to reiterate, there are nursing homes that are managing. So we are working with the ones who are really struggling.
ICU beds. We heard quite a detailed report from Tony Hoolan about the flow, you know, the 148 cases, the ones discharged, the ones unfortunately died, and the ones that are continuing to receive treatment. Isn't it true to say that one of the best news stories is that the surge to date has been well within the boundaries of ICU pressures and capacity? Are you fairly confident now that even if if numbers doubled again, that, you know, going to ICU, you'd be still well within your capacity zone, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I mean, I certainly won't be saying I'm confident about any numbers just yet. I think it's far too early to say that. But I think certainly today we are managing. Now, we still have quite a number of people. So, you know, 137 this morning in terms of ICU. And people, that number changes. So obviously people go in and come out of ICU. But it is the place where we are seeing, I suppose, quite a high level of activity. What is, I suppose, a reassuring thing for us at the minute is the rate of growth. So, you know, we are currently, I think, doubling our numbers about every fifth day in terms of numbers of people in hospital or numbers of people in ICU. And if we can keep it at that, we may be okay, but it's very, very early to say that. We are seeing numbers going up. And we have to continue to try and keep those numbers down by doing the things that we started talking about at the very beginning of this in terms of the social distancing and the hand washing and all of that, because those measures are so, so important in terms of the demand on ICU beds and ventilators and all of the things that are at the very, very acute end of this pathway. However, for us today, we are managing. We are seeing particular, I suppose, higher numbers in the east, both in terms of cases and in terms of numbers of people in hospital and ICU. So our focus is very much on supporting those busier sites and supporting the overall health system by having things like City West in place so that we know we have enough capacity to support acute hospitals and support people in the community. But today it's okay, but I'm not okay. Going to try and foresee what might happen.
Final question, non-COVID hospital consultations. Met someone today and their arm was in a sling and I said, what happened to you? And they had a fall. They said, you really, you know, should get an x-ray. I said, I've not gone near a hospital, you know, the way things are at the moment. The word is out there, whether you like it or not, that if you want to pick up infection, the first place you go is to hospitals. Now, that may be absolutely fake news, but Tony Holohan was echoing this because when he went to James's himself the other night with a non-COVID ailment. I mean, what is your message to people who in the normal course of events might be on a trolley, we'd be talking about that, or need to go for diagnostics for some problem they have? They could have a lump in their breast or they could have any particular problem and they're just staying away from the normal health service. What would you say to them?
Yeah, well, I'd encourage people to go and to get help. I mean, we are very concerned now about the people who are not attending. We can see, I mean, you know, on a daily basis now, we might have 6 trolleys in the country instead of, you know, far, far more than that. And we can see that people are staying away. And whilst on one hand, you could argue that gives us capacity in our system, it's not the right thing. So we have people who we know are experiencing, for example, mild strokes, who are feeling very unwell and who really need to be seen on an urgent basis and who are staying away. And what I would say to people is, again, to please seek help. It is not the right thing to stay away. What we're finding is that people are staying away for too long and they're sometimes missing that critical window for getting treatment and intervention. And our system, whilst we have busy spots in terms of COVID-19, our whole system is not like that. We have some very quiet hospitals at the minute. We have emergency departments that are not very busy. They will always be have a level of busyness, but they're really not very busy. People will be seen. And likewise, our GP out of hours service, our minor injury units, our normal in-hour GP services, they're all working and they are available. And part of our approach to this, so for example, next week on Monday, we'll be starting the first of our clinical assessment units in the community. And the focus for that really is to keep people away from mainstream GP practices who are COVID positive so that the GPs can continue to see the people with all of those illnesses and injuries that haven't gone away just because of COVID-19. So I would encourage Ivan, anybody who feels that they are unwell and becoming more unwell or somebody who's had some kind of an event or an incident, to please get help. You know, the services are there, they are open for business, and all of our very experienced healthcare staff are there to provide that service today, notwithstanding the COVID-19 response.
Anne O'Connor, Chief Operating Officer of the HSC, thank you indeed for joining us. We really appreciate your candour and your availability and answering my questions.
The Hard Shoulder on Newstalk
with Nissan. Let's go the distance by keeping our distance. Nissan. Innovation that excites.